You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here this hour. Lots to get to, lots to talk about as we bring back our all-star panel to talk about the issues and the things that have popped up this week from infrastructure. Yes, we're going to get some stuff done. Thank goodness. To inflation, is it overblown? To all of the craziness going in to Congress. It's bizarre to me. And the question that keeps coming to mind is, how is it we're getting anything done with half of our government literally insane? And here to share some thoughts on, well, how do we get anything done? And, well, what we should be doing, I've asked our all-star panel of Rich Ojeda from No Dems Left Behind, Sarah Burris from Raw Story, and Scott Dworkin from the Democratic Coalition. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Airborne.
So let's start with Paul Gosar. Sent the video, wants to kill AOC and Biden. The Democrats throw him off his committee. They censure him. He has this whole little meltdown, weird kind of whatever that was. Thoughts? Let's start with you, Scott.
Paul Gosar belongs in prison, first of all. Let me just start there. Two Republicans voted for him to be censured, and that's it, Kinzinger and Cheney. You know, what he did, okay, first of all, I want to make it clear that he got censured for this anime video that depicted killing AOC, Biden, and hurting others. But that is not the only that's not the only thing that he's committed that is worthy of a censure. And so this was kind of like the tipping point of, all right, that's enough. And I don't know why it was now, but I'm glad that they went through with it. And so now he's been removed from his committees, like Marjorie Taylor Greene was as well. So I think that he deserves it. He's earned it. I mean, he has no one to blame but himself. The fact that he's still in Congress is a travesty for Congress itself. Yeah. But it's really, really disgusting.
No, you're right. Now, Sarah, you know, I'm looking at this, and basically what the Republicans are saying, since all of them except for two voted to say that's okay, death threats against women in the workplace, a-okay. I kind of look at it that if they didn't vote to not censure him, that they would be getting death threats. So their fear of their constituents, that's part of it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, one of the pieces of this that I feel like folks are kind of downplaying a little bit is it isn't just that he's talking about killing people. He's talking about straight up assassinating a federal official and and the president of the United States. You know, killing people is bad, but this is a politically motivated assassination that he is fantasizing about in view of the entire public. One of the things that we learned in the new John Carl book, Betrayal, which was mostly about the final days of the Trump administration and the aftermath in January 6th, he doesn't source to which member of Congress told him, but apparently a bunch of members of Congress frequently talk about that they think that Gosar is completely insane, like seriously mentally ill. And they just don't say it in public. They say it behind the scenes.
Well, that little video he did afterwards, right after he was censured, he marched back into his office all shaking and slurring his words. And I don't really know what he was saying. But I know there will be more anime, Rich. There will be more anime videos, and there will be more insanity. And you look at this and you go, you know, as somebody who's been in the military and has had to do things, people who make these kind of cowardly threats, do we take them seriously or not?
Well, the thing about it is Paul Gosar doesn't have the courage to ever follow through with a threat like that. He doesn't. But the thing about it is that there are a lot of wackadoos out there that absolutely will listen to what he says and will get fired up with that. You know, I think it's an absolute travesty that we only saw two Republicans willing to stand up and actually vote to censor this jackaloon. You know, it is absolutely unacceptable that this guy would act this way. And it's really sad because now he's been removed from his committee. So I hope the people in Arizona realize that now you have a person that's getting paid $174,000 a year that doesn't get to sit in on the committees, which means he's not a part of the topic of conversation. So basically, you're paying this guy to do absolutely nothing. So now we have two people between him and Marjorie Trainwreck Greene. Both of them are absolutely nuttier than a daggone, you know what, house rat. And of course, you know, that's where we're at. And yeah. It's a real sad thing. I'm glad to see that the Democrats finally went forward and did something. I'm really happy that we're starting to see some movement on some of these things that these people have done that have absolutely just waged war on our democracy. And it's time that we see some things happen.
Now, you've got House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy saying that when the Republicans take back power, he's going to reinstate the both of them. They're both getting their committees back. They're going to be restored to their places. He said they'll have committees. They may have other committee assignments. They may have better committee assignments.
And that's why we do not allow them to win in 2022. Because, I mean, that right there tells you what kind of a coward Kevin McCarthy is. You know, I tell you what, Bruno Amato, I hope he stomps him like a narc at a biker rally.
anyone want to weigh in on that?
Don't forget that they're not paying Green $63,000 because she got fined for not wearing a mask on the House floor. It's 63,000 dozens of transgressions. So she's actually losing money overall. I think her salary is going to be around 75 instead of 186 or whatever. But, you know, and same thing with Gosar. He's been fined as well. But they're just, you know, all of these antics do nothing but scare people. And what it does is in the wrong way, not in the go vote kind of way, in a vote against them kind of way, like these crazy people cannot be in power kind of way. You know, I think some people may lose, especially like Lauren Boebert and others. I don't think that they have a pathway to the House as of right now because they have Donald Trump with a comeback in January. He's going to come back and he's going to divide the party by saying, okay, if you have a competitive primary, I want you to endorse my run for president. And if you don't endorse me, I'm going to primary you. And he's going to do that in every single district against every single senator that's running, and also do it where it's 2024 races for Senate. He'll announce that he's going to primary them with somebody else. It's going to be blood sport for him. And so I don't think that they're prepared for that. They had a little bit time off with Glenn Youngkin in Virginia. That's not how the race is going to be in 2022. And so we're living in la la land if we think so. Same thing with January 6th cases coming up. The real serious cases are next year. And they've got to deal with that on top of other scandals that we'll uncover, especially with coronavirus deaths. So I think that they have a long road ahead of them. And in the grand scheme of things, the momentum's still on our side, traveling from 2017 and onwards.
I hope you're right, because, you know, the sad reality is the Republican Party, the voters, a lot of them, you know, crazy. I mean, there's nothing else to say about this. And this is where the party has been going for a very long time. And this is where I started this whole spiel on how do you govern? How do you get anything done? And I give Biden the ultimate credit. Good on Biden and the Democrats for actually getting something done in an environment where you have half of the governing body literally insane defending sending anime death threats. It's crazy to me, Sarah.
It is crazy, and it's just more of the same of what we've seen for the last, 5 years now. These are Republicans who have, honestly, this has been going on, I feel like, since the Tea Party movement. We've just had more and more and more of them get into more power. And now you've got Mitch McConnell in this weird feud with Donald Trump, who wants to bring him down. So even Mitch McConnell, who, you know, isn't exactly the most moderating voice, but his philosophy has always been like, don't screw with your colleagues, who especially are going to be in a tight race whenever they're running again in the next election. And so, you know, again, you look at all of these people like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and folks that are just making hay. And I think it's putting Republicans who are up for re-election in 2022 in a really awkward position where it's like, do they defend their own party and risk losing a primary, or do they lose their general election?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what next year's election brings us. Are they really the party of Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Traitor Greene and Paul Gosar and the other kooks, the Gohmerts of the world? Scott,
you know, Rick. Let me jump in here, Rick. You know, the thing that I see is that the biggest issue is that the Republicans have tapped into what we now know as the poorly educated. And the Democrats should absolutely be doing everything in their power to tap into the working class, to show the support of unions, show what we're trying to do to put people back to work. You know, because right now the Republicans have been able to tap in to that group of people out there that think that Donald Trump is the second coming of Christ. And we have to combat that by showing the people that we support the middle class, the workers, the unions. And that's the way forward for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and I think Biden's been doing that. I mean, I give Biden credit. You know, two of the three legs of the stool that he's going to use to help rebuild our economy, they've gotten through. It's been ugly. It's taken longer than I want. You know, the Build Back Better plan, I'm hoping we get through here in the next several days. There's some good stuff with all of this craziness in the backdrop. And I look at the next thing I wanted to bring up, which was I was surprised. I'll be honest, Scott, you were right on this. Steve Bannon was indicted. There's part of me now that goes, is this, you know, his Hitler moment where he goes to jail to be the martyr, the victim, write his version of Mein Kampf so he can come out and be the inciter. This is an interesting moment.
Yeah, countless Republicans sprinted, especially staffers on the Hill, sprinted to the January 6th committee after that happened. None of them want to mess with that. You don't want to be indicted. There's no, I know if you're a millionaire like him, you can go and do that and play those games, and that just builds his credibility up in his own little crowd. But if you're working on the Hill, you'll be banned from the Hill forever if you get indicted or if you're involved with any of that madness. Now, I think this sends a big signal, and especially with Mark Meadows probably being next, unless they're talking behind the scenes about the negotiation and he's scared for his life and blah, 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 that kind of madness. I just think that if not this, like if not the indictment, like then it would be a failed cause at that point. You have to be able to get people to compel them to testify. If not, then you're not going to get to the truth.
Yeah.
And I've been assured that we will get to the truth by any means necessary. And I truly believe that because we are not done yet. There are hundreds of other people that are getting subpoenas and we haven't even gotten the reps yet. And I hope that the reps refuse, as in Marjorie Taylor Greene and others who are accomplices who helped plan January 6th, the rally at the bare minimum. I hope that they refuse to testify so they're arrested just for this, and then they can investigate them further. Because that's the other thing. People need to remember that there's other charges potentially for Bannon And there's other investigations going on with Bannon right now. So this may just be the tip of the iceberg for him.
Yeah, and there's a jail. There's a jail right there in the Capitol. We can start locking him up right there. And I do find it interesting, the guy who was the chairman of the Proud Boys, Enrique, whatever his name is, you know, whining, let me out of jail because, oh, it's so bad in here. Rich, you got a thought.
Hilarious. Like, they just all of a sudden realize that prison is a bad place. I mean, like, have you not seen the movies? Remember the insurrectionist who said she was looking at YouTube videos to see what prison was going to be like? Like, why do you need to look at YouTube videos to understand what prison is like? Yeah. There's, I mean, Shawshank Redemption. Have you not seen the Shawshank Redemption? Everybody in the world has seen the Shawshank Redemption. So it's like, I do not understand these people. They're suddenly, you know, staging protests like, prison is a bad place. Well, no kidding. Surprise.
But what you have to also understand is that he doesn't realize he's running around with a bunch of racists, and his name is Enrique Tarrio. Guess what? The white people in prison don't want to deal with him, and apparently you know for a fact that the Latino Hispanic crew, they don't want nothing to do with him. So that guy is on an island in the middle of the jail, and now he's crying like a schoolgirl with a skinned up knee. I love it.
No, and what's funny is these are the very people who say, you know, prison isn't hard enough. That we're too good to people in prison. They've got cable TV and weight rooms and all kinds of stuff. So now to hear them crying, I have no sympathy for them. None.
Me either. There's nothing left to have for them. I have no sympathy for them whatsoever because they made their choices and now we make ours and they have to face the repercussions of it. And just because you're white, a white woman who's overprivileged real estate worker doesn't mean that you're above the law. And I think that's a strong message to send. Same thing if you went in there like a Sherpa or whatever he was trying to act like, the shaman, you know, he goes in there with a spear. I'm glad that he's spending, you know, years in prison and then also years with federal probation where he's drug tested and can't really get a job. These repercussions, these are going to cost them for millions of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands, if they have any representation at all, if they have any money. Yeah. They're not going to have prospects for jobs for decades. They're going to pay for this for years and years to come, every single one of them, and they deserve it. Every single moment, at the very least. I think all these people should have been in prison the entire time, and they should face at least a minimum of decade in prison. That's where I agreed with Trump on, the one thing, except with the insurrectionist specifically is what I mean.
Yeah, no, I mean, you brought up the QAnon shaman, you know, this Jacob Chansley, who, you know, if you read his statement, was really, you know, kind of funny. You know, I've changed my heart and I'm not who I was and all this. Oh, please don't send me to jail. He gets 41 months with which I got to tell you, I don't know is I don't know. It's long enough. But it's still better than the slap on the wrists we've been seeing. So it seems like the sentences are getting a little bit longer, and I think that's a good thing.
Absolutely. I was surprised by that kind of sentence, too, because prosecutors asked for 4 years, and he got 41 months. You know, it's not far off, but it's still lower than I think all of us wanted.
Without question. You had a thought, Rich?
It's all fun and games until you have to fight naked. So enjoy the shower time, my man.
Ouch, 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 ouch. Unless you're Joe Rogan and you can reach yourself. That's just not funny. And finally, Sarah, you had a story that I thought was great. And maybe the thought that this QAnon stuff may be kind of waning a little bit. A person who was running for Congress, this Ron Watkins, I guess his name was, claimed he was going to raise $1 million. How much has he raised?
Zero. He has raised $0. Granted, he is now a witness in some kind of fraud trial or case in Colorado.
Of course he is.
But this is the guy who basically took QAnon and brought it to the MAGA world. And he was, you know, he came out with a lot of enthusiasm and pledged that he was going to win $1 million. And he just hasn't really done a lot. And he's got a Telegram account with something like 450,000 people on it. And so for somebody to have access to 450,000 cell phones and nobody's donating to you, that says something about you.
I think a lot of people.
It's like a troll master, so I would assume that a lot of these accounts are fake, and it's just a fake reality because that's where most Republicans live, at least in my opinion.
There you go.
Or press.
There you go. Let's take a quick break right here, guys. Stick around. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
There's nothing more American than workers standing up, and the union gives a voice to win. On The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day 21,000 attendants, mostly women, caught American Airlines by surprise in their first strike ever against the company. 80% of all flights were canceled a week before Thanksgiving as solid picket lines formed at 40 airports across the country. CEO Robert Crandall, who commanded $1 million a year salary and preferred the nickname Fang, was at a loss when flight attendants refused to be bullied by threats of scab replacements. Hoping to smash seniority and scheduling rights, he canceled all vacations for months. Crandall's claims to company losses could hardly be believed after the company reported third quarter profits of $118 million. Attendants were fed up with years of concessionary contracts that reduced their wages by as much as 40%. One woman picketer summed up the company's attitude saying, quote, "We're just a bunch of skirts." The strike was so popular that pilots and Teamsters often joined picketers. In New York City, 200 members of Local 1199 hospital workers walked the picket line in solidarity. Fed up machinists at United Airlines in Denver were so inspired, they staged a solidarity sick-out the first day of the strike. 4 days later, President Clinton intervened to end the strike and force binding arbitration. While many saw this as a victory, workers returned to the jobs under the same conditions that forced them to strike while they waited for arbitrators to render a decision. 2 years later, arbitrators finally rendered that decision. They awarded American the right to reduce staffing level on some flights, but flight attendants would win a 17% wage increase and retain most work rules.
Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you see all of the right-wing media outlets, you know, the Fox News, the OANs, all the crazies, splashing Joe Biden's approval ratings all over the place. And again, I'm not sure where they're pulling these numbers from, but I don't know how Biden's only at 32%, given the fact that we got the American Rescue Plan pushed through that helped people get through the pandemic. And now with the infrastructure bill, that's going to create, you know, upwards of 2 million jobs over the next decade. I'm not quite sure who they're polling, unless it's, you know, maybe it's the local QAnon group. I don't know. But, you know, here's the thing. They're highlighting the fact that we've got supply chain issues, and we do. They're gleeful over the fact that there are rising gas prices, and all of the reports of inflation just have them all tingling in the panties. That's why I was happy to see Joe Biden this week write a letter to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and say, hey, start looking into this stuff. Start going after these people, because what I've been saying is, yeah, the supply chain thing's a little bit, I think it's more good old-fashioned American capitalism and opportunism and gouging. But just my thoughts, and here to share some thoughts on where we are and why is Biden's approval rating where it's at. I've got our all-star panel of Rich Ojeda, No Dems Left Behind, Sarah Burris Ross-Story, and Scott Dworkin of the Democratic Coalition. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
Hey, boom.
You bet.
So the approval ratings, not good. I see them all over Fox News every day. Biden in the tank. His economy's killing us. I see, you know, Donald Trump say that we got to stop Sleepy Joe and the communist dream bill or something. Scott, let's start with you. Thoughts?
I think America's mood is the way that they're asking the questions is really important here. And just jumping into like, how do you feel about Biden and starting with the negatives first, plant something in people's head. And they're not doing as wide of a polling as possible. And they're also not doing the distribution of the representation of America. So there's a lot of things where they're just kind of making it real nice and tight. And a lot of these things also, and this is where you get the real emotional responses, is when you have a poll and there's not a person on the other line. They're actually using the dial tone as in like 1, 2, or 3, like hit 1 if you really dislike what he's doing, hit 2 if you kind of dislike what he's doing. And if people hit 1, they go for the worst kind of rating, because it's like, I had a bad day today and I don't like him anymore. I mean, he knows when his approval rating will matter. And right now it doesn't, because his approval rating overall, if you actually delve into it and you ask people maybe 40 or 50 questions about Biden specifically, I'm guessing the sentiment around him would be much greater, because even Democrats are tired. They're just tired. People are angry. Yeah, and it could be, well, I thought Biden would fix the Republicans or arrest Trump, or I thought that, like, there's a lot of that stuff. So the 36% of the people who have been polled who said, yeah, I approve, probably just wanted to get off the phone.
No, in fact, you know, I've had people say, well, I thought he was going to unite the parties. He was going to unite us. I'm going, how do you unite with crazy? I mean, this is where we are. I mean, the Republicans have been telling us they don't believe in government. They don't believe in government doing anything. And then when they're in charge, they set out to make sure it's broken and keep it broken. Sarah, your thoughts?
Well, one of the things that we found out this week is that there was a Trump holdover who was intentionally lying about the jobs numbers. We found out that there were 240,000 more jobs this past quarter this past month than we thought that there were. So it's something like, you know, 600 and something thousand people. And now the unemployment rate has dropped down to, you know, at the very start of this pandemic. So it's not nearly as bad as it was before. At the same time, I think I've been critical about Biden not taking enough of a victory lap. And we've talked about this before. I feel like we talked about this last week too, where I think people forgot that the American Rescue Plan was the Democrats. It wasn't the Republicans. And, you know, we've had so many stimulus packages at this point that, you know, it just doesn't, people forget. And so I think Democrats really need to step up here and start taking some bows and reminding people what we've done.
Yeah. No, and he's doing some of that, I think, now with the infrastructure bill. Yeah. He was in New Hampshire. He was in Michigan. He's going around to crumbling things and going, hey, we're going to fix this. Thanks to us. Thanks to us, Rich.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, I was looking at some of the numbers and things like that, and they were talking, you know, West Virginia is going to get like 80,000 jobs like that once the money starts flowing down to these areas here. So that's huge. You know, and once again, you know, who's doing the polling? If it's a poll from Fox News, what do you expect? But I agree with what Sarah says. You know, go around and take credit. Joe Biden vaccinated America. And he did it with literally no infrastructure when he took over as the president of the United States. To me, he's been hitting home runs out of the park. And once again, you know, the Republicans are going to scream inflation. This is a global problem. Inflation is happening all across the planet. That's an absolute fact. COVID caused this.
Yep.
And once again, I mean, you know, I've listened to some folks that said by summertime, everything's going to be back. It's going to be much better for us here in this country. And as far as, you know, like the price of gas, I love how President Biden has already come out and said he wants investigations done, because right now, to be able to generate the fuel for this country, basically the price has went down. So why is the price at the pump went up? So I love that President Biden is saying, I want investigations now, because if we catch these companies doing this, we're going to hold them accountable. And that needs to happen.
Yeah, there should be a place right next to Steve Bannon and the rest of them for when they're going to put them right between the shaman and that Torres guy. That'd be a good start. But here's the thing.
Absolutely.
You know, as Sarah pointed out, the unemployment rate's back down to lower levels. And now the Philadelphia Fed has pointed out that manufacturing is at a 7-month high. It's better than it, well better than it was expected, that we're actually bringing some manufacturing back. So some good signs, yet you don't really see that so much in our media structure.
I think that we're, look at the jobs. I mean, we're talking union jobs. You know, we're talking about replacing all of the lead pipes. Who's going to do that? You're talking pipe fitters, plumbers. These are union folks. I mean, to me, there's so much to be excited about right now with the things that Joe Biden has done. So I agree. Take another victory lap. Yeah. Go to every single state. Go to every single state. Look people in the face and ask them, how is that child tax credit treating you guys? Because that's elevating 40% of the children in this country out of poverty. And oh, by the way, you know, that's important. And a lot of people don't want to let people know that they're getting that child tax credit, but they are. And you know what? I'll tell you what, we need to make that a permanent thing to continue forever.
There you go. Sarah, you wanted to jump in?
I was going to say, I wish that we could have, you know, some sort of sign that we could put on every single infrastructure project that just said, brought to you by the Build Back Better plan. I think that'd be amazing.
That would be great. That would be amazing. But isn't that what, you know, didn't Obama do some of that with the plan that they had, which I thought was great, you know, brought to you by the American Rescue and Recovery Act. We need to be doing that, promoting it, and look, advertising around it, because people need to know who and how and all of that.
I agree.
It makes me think of Obamacare. Remember whenever everybody was just like trashing Obamacare and now everybody likes it and we're just like, oh, remember all those times you kept trying to make this into Obamacare and now his name is really on it.
Yeah. Scott?
The Dem messengers, the people who are the messengers for the Democratic Party are not funded. That's the problem here. You need to fund groups like Riches, like mine. You need to fund groups like Midas Touch and I mean, there's so many others that are out there that are just Demcast, and they're just not getting the money. We lost Virginia because of that. We would have been the ones, especially the Democratic Coalition, we would have been the ones who pushed against CRT. We didn't raise enough money to do that. We tried, and we couldn't hit back against them because we didn't have enough money to do so. And I think if we don't fund our messengers, and we keep on funding the same way, we're gonna lose the House and the Senate. So I hope that there's a reallocation of funding, because that is the main problem right now, is they're not investing into the infrastructure that groups like Rich and I have built. And that is the main problem right now for the Democratic Party. And otherwise, you know, Rich and I are gonna have to write books and move away from the campaign side of things if we're not funded. So, I mean, we're gonna end up losing people, and we'll end up losing the House and the Senate, and you know, that's a nightmare scenario. So we need to start investing into the right groups now, not later.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you bring this up, because the right spends lots of money on messaging vehicles. You look at Fox News, you look at OAN, you look at Newsmax. You could go down the list of all of the right-wing outlets that are out there that are heavily funded and do their water carrying. There's almost none of that on the other side. So the message isn't there. From the end of the Fairness Doctrine until now, the corporatists, the conservatives, the radical right, they have spent heavily on messaging, whereas, well, not so much on the other side.
Look, I'll tell you right now, it's not like we're not trying, though. I mean, I've had conversations with Jamie Harrison and them and told them, look, if we don't invest in rural America to flip seats from red to blue, the best case scenario is always going to be 50-50 with the VP being the tie-breaking vote. We got to invest in rural America. We, you know, it amazes me how we're going to sit here and we're going to throw a $250 million away in two races against McConnell and Lindsey Graham. And if we would have took that money and spread that throughout this country, we would have flipped red seats blue all across America.
No, I don't doubt that. Sarah, you want to jump in this last thought on it?
Yeah, it makes me harken back to Howard Dean's 50 state strategy. And I don't understand why we have not continued that plan, you know, from that point onward, because it was the most successful of all of them. There were organizers on the ground in every district, and we've got to have that again. We have to fund these campaigns and fund these candidates.
No, I'm right there with you. And it was probably because of that weird noise he made. Woo! We're going to go, woo!
That was the easiest thing out of anybody. Now, looking back on that, that's like the tamest thing ever, and it ruined his campaign.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I mean, that's kind of...
He had no voice left. Yeah, so we're going to throw him out of the race because of no voice left. But here's the question, and I keep coming back to this. You know, our media, you know, throws things out. They build things up just so they can tear it down. And right now, the economy's doing pretty well. Most people I talk to are doing okay. You know, job numbers are okay, are doing great. I think, you know, Biden has created over the last 3 months over 800,000 jobs a month has been the average. You know, as I said, the manufacturing numbers are up. Things are, all the indicators are moving us in the right direction. And yet we've got this media message that, no, not so much. And I look at this story from the CDC, where from last April to this April, we have had the most drug overdose deaths in the history of the country. We're over 100,000, the first time it's ever touched 100,000. And part of me goes, it's all of this negativity, it's all of this chaos, and a government that is decidedly broken because one of the parties wants it that way.
Remember whenever Donald Trump said that he was going to fight opioid addiction and these kinds of overdoses, and basically he had some blue ribbon task force where Kellyanne Conway pretended like she was doing something that mattered, and nothing ever happened. So it doesn't surprise me that from, you know, April of 2020 until April of this year, you know, we've had the most overdose deaths that we've ever had.
You know, I can remember when it was a big deal when they said, you know, the overdose death actually surpassed the number of lives that were lost during the Vietnam War. Now we're in six figures every single year now, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, one of the biggest problems that I believe is that we're, you know, as long as Big Pharma has the ability to grease the pockets of legislators in this country and buy their protection, nothing changes. West Virginia was the lab rats. We were ground zero. And emails were captured that said from the execs from Big Pharma saying, keep them coming, boys. They're eating them up like Doritos. You keep them making them and they'll keep them taking them. And that was captured. And what did West Virginia get? We got a garbage daggone attorney general. The daggone gave the daggone people a slap on the wrist. I think we got like $2 million. It's a shame. We have lost. No family has went unscathed from this opioid scourge.
Yeah, and they're saying about three quarters of the deaths in this are related to like knockoff fentanyl. You know, we're now in this world where this is, thanks for creating this. You know, this is what's killing us.
Absolutely.
Did you hear about the seizure at the border that happened? Apparently, the Republican Party is promoting the fact that that a massive seizure of fentanyl was caught at the border. And I guess it happened at a port of entry. And the Republicans have now said, this is why we need safe borders. And we're all just like, but they captured them. Like, they got them.
Yeah.
And,
well, no, that was during the Trump years, wasn't it? Like, where they came up with this huge cache of drugs, they came up with guns, they had this huge display of all this stuff that they captured at the port of entry. It wasn't like it came through a tunnel or anything. It was caught through normal means, which completely blew out their argument for, oh, we need a giant wall.
Yeah.
And it goes back to they said that there were 204 million deadly doses of fentanyl that are not on the streets now because of that. And so I was like, okay, Joe Biden just saved 204 million people.
There you go. Scott, you want to jump into that?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's called like panic culture, where everything is on fire and my hair is constantly on fire. And if I do something that drives people to panic, they're going to give me money. They're going to give me likes. They're going to give me retweets. They're going to share my stuff. They're going to believe in me. They're going to come and support me. When in reality, all they're doing is driving people to be insane. So I think that there's a lot, like, it doesn't make any sense why Ronna McDaniel is sitting there screaming about the border seizure, as Sarah had mentioned, when it's a positive thing. It's like a self-owned where she's trying to act like it's a controversy. And then some Republicans are running with that, being like, yeah, exactly. They don't even know what they're talking about because they don't care. They just want some kind of controversy to bring up. And this panic culture that they've created is going to backfire big time, because eventually people won't buy into the narrative, because now they're going off the crazy train even further than they did with January 6th and everything, especially with the speeches or garbage or I'm not going to say any words with it because I don't want to say it on your show. But all of the things that they said yesterday surrounding Gosar, like, you can tell that they're using the same terms. It's getting old. People are getting bored. Either do something or shut up and sit down.
There you go. And that's where we're going to leave this. I'm going to take a quick break. Stick around to the other side. Going to talk about guns on the other side. We're seeing these trials, the Rittenhouse trial, the Aubrey trial, some legislation coming around. I'm going to come back and talk a little bit about that. Stick around. We're right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at therickssmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1929. That was the day that Vilio Rosval and Jani Voutilainen disappeared on their way to recruit workers at a bush camp during a strike in northwestern Ontario, Canada, near Thunder Bay. They were both Finnish Canadians. Vilio Rosval was an organizer for the Lumber Workers Industrial Union of Canada. The union included many Finnish lumber workers and had ties to the Canadian Communist Party. Jani Voutilainen was an experienced trapper. The two men never made it to their destination, the Pigeon Timber Company camp located north of Onion Lake. It was unknown what had happened to them until the next April. Voutilainen's body was found in shallow water at the edge of Onion Lake. A few days later, Rosval was found also drowned in a nearby creek that emptied into the lake. The Finnish workers blamed the deaths of the two men on the conservative Finnish camp boss, who oversaw the Onion Lake encampment. The coroner's autopsy ruled the deaths accidental drownings, but many remained unconvinced and suspected foul play. They questioned how an experienced trapper such as Voutilainen could fall through the ice and drown in such shallow water. Thousands attended the funeral for the martyrs. The debate over what happened to the two men continues to this day. An historical marker reads, quote, "The mystery surrounding the deaths of Rosval and Voutilainen endures, sustaining them in public memory as martyrs to the cause of organized labor." A headstone donated by the Thunder Bay and District Labor Council was erected in 1993 to honor the graves which had gone previously unmarked. The deaths of the two men traveling to organize workers remains a mystery of the Canadian labor movement to this day. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Young Dolph the Rapper. Unfortunately, I've never heard of Young Dolph the Rapper, but evidently Young Dolph was fatally shot while buying cookies at a bakery. There's something wrong with it when you can't buy a cookie. But he was fatally shot in Memphis, Tennessee while buying cookies at a bakery. And you go, guns everywhere? And I look at what happened in Ohio yesterday and Pennsylvania the day before, where in Pennsylvania they have passed, the House has passed a law that says that they're going to eliminate any permitting for carrying a concealed weapon. You're going to be able to carry a gun no matter what, anywhere you want, concealed, open, whatever. And they also dropped the age from 21 down to 18. So fun on that. And Ohio did something similar. They got rid of all of the permitting with no background checks, no training, no nothing. Carry your gun wherever. And also, they're going to let teachers are going to be able to carry concealed weapons. Oh, boy. Made me think about one of the old substitutes I used to have, Mr. Kren. I got to wonder what would have happened had Mr. Kren been packing heat. Probably none of us would be alive today. Here to share some thoughts on the gun world that we now find ourselves. I've got our good friends, Rich Ojeda from No Dems Left Behind, Sarah Burris, Raw Story, and Scott Dworkin, Democratic Coalition. Let's start with you, Rich. You're a gun guy. Is it a good idea?
No, it's not. You know, I've carried weapons for this nation for 24 years. I own guns. You know, at the end of the day, I want to see gun reform. I will tell you that there's no reason. If you need a 30-round clip to hunt a deer, then go buy your meat because you suck. You know, that's just the way that it is. You know, I just don't understand it. And what we're seeing is we're basically seeing a bunch of Republican states that are basically trying to push legislation, because they want to act like they're supporting guns no matter what. This is going to end up biting them in the backside. You know, when the death rate starts to grow, when anybody can carry a gun without any type of background check at all, you're talking mentally, folks that have mental issues. You know, I talk about this Kyle Rittenhouse. Kyle Rittenhouse, if you look at his history as he was growing up, he's no different than some of the kids that I had in high school when I taught ROTC that I could not give a military uniform to, because I could not guarantee that they wouldn't be out there the next day directing traffic in downtown, you know, or knocking on doors telling people that they're a sergeant major trying to raise money for troops. So, I mean, you know, that's where we're at. Yeah. And you're going to let people like that be able to carry weapons without any, you know, background checks or anything. It's going to end badly, and it's going to rise the death rate.
No, you brought up Rittenhouse, and, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is here's a kid who said he was going to go stop the violence, and he was going to use violence if he had to by taking that gun with him. And to me, there's never a situation where a gun reduces violence. You enter a gun into any situation, it's going to escalate. And I had a friend who was a policeman years ago who said, if you're going to pull a gun, you better damn well be ready to use it. Because according to him, the majority of policemen killed on the job are killed with their own guns because someone will take it and use it on you. Sarah, your thoughts?
So one of the things about these laws that say that anybody can carry and you don't have to have a license anymore, a lot of these concealed carry licenses required a certain amount of training and expertise to carry the weapons. And without those, you end up with people who are just going to start like firing willy-nilly. So, you know, if they go up against police, at least hopefully they're going to be really crappy shots.
Yeah. No, but here's the thing. I'm not against the Aaron Burr and Hamilton, you know, rowing across the Hudson to get the Weehawken in New Jersey to have their duel, because they're not going to shoot an innocent bystander. My problem is you got a bunch of yahoos with guns throwing bullets at each other. They're probably both going to hit me.
Yeah, that's why you should really just hide. You know, I'm staying out of certain areas and a lot of those public spaces anyway, because of COVID, but yeah, it's scary. And I think what is crazy to me is you've got the NRA in shambles right now. And so why are all of these Republicans passing these laws when they don't have a lobby to hammer them all the time for it? And you know, obviously the NRA is got a serious image issue that's going to take them down. Yeah. So I'm just surprised. And I'm also surprised that you don't have, you know, police officers and police unions coming up and saying, you know, we don't want this because it's endangering us.
Yeah. Scott,
Rick, let me say something real quick. If you are not trained to move to the sounds of the guns, then you are a hazard. That's just the way that it is.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Scott, do you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I mean, like, they're obviously appealing to one-issue voters, but at the same time, there's not many of them. There's not a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Most responsible gun owners would want there to be, you know, more exclusivity the more dangerous a weapon is. The more powerful the weapon, the more training and background should be required with it. And there's some things, weapons of war, that don't belong on the streets. And I think that's right. Like, there should be more police unions. There should be more military speaking out against this, because it's just going to hurt people in the long run. Idiots with guns equal gun crime and gun violence all over the country. And things will spike in Texas and places like that, where you can just go and get a gun from the corner store or whatever. I mean, it really is maddening, because it's just going to turn into a bunch of domestic terrorism throughout the country. They're funding it, you know, through cheap guns and cheap ammo that we don't need on the streets in the first place. And we're not going to be able to control it or know where the problems actually are.
I'm surprised they're not in vending machines.
That's probably, or look, these ghost guns that are out there, where they'll send you all of the pieces and you can be a gun manufacturer at home, and they're not traceable. They're not nothing. All you have to do, maybe you file something off, or, you know, clip off a tag or something, and you've got a gun that is untraceable. This is not a good place to be as a country. And I look at this trial going on in Georgia. This McMichael guy claims that he believed that his life was in danger, which is why he killed this unarmed black man who was doing nothing but jogging. Because, hey, he believed he might have been somebody who went through some house. And I'm going, you know, my mind goes, and Rich, we've talked about this. If he isn't carrying that gun, if he doesn't have that firearm courage, he's not going to approach this guy. He's going to call the police, and they're going to deal with it. But because this guy goes, hey, I got this gun, and he's fetishized the idea of whipping out a big one and sticking it to somebody, this is the kind of crap we end up with, which is why we shouldn't be making it easier to have guns. We should be making it much harder.
Well, let's go back and talk about Rittenhouse. You know, the judge threw out that basically law that said that anybody under the age of 18 is not allowed to be carrying a weapon, period. So Kyle Rittenhouse, when he was 17 and went to Kenosha, was actually not supposed to be there, and he definitely was not supposed to be carrying a weapon. And had he not had that weapon on him, no, three people would have not been shot, and all three would be here today.
No, and that's where I started this. You know, he went there with the intention he's going to stop the violence. He's going to guard those used cars. He's going to guard those cards with every stroke of his being. And if he's got to shoot somebody, he's going to do it. Because when you bring the gun, that's what you're saying. I'm willing to shoot you because I have this tool that is going to make you stop. At least that's my thought. Scott, you want to jump in there?
I mean, it is, again, it doesn't make any logical sense. All of it doesn't make any logical sense. Like, if you're talking about the Second Amendment and you want a single shot bayonet that you want to carry around everywhere and load it the same way, then fine. But this is not what the founding fathers, the racist slave owning founding fathers, wanted in the first place. You know, they like to cite them with everything, and then they're like, oh, George Washington would have wanted this way. Well, George Washington implemented the first vaccine mandate in the United States, and you're against them. So it really is something where we have to redefine the messaging for it. It's not a gun makes you powerful. It's the fact that if you want to protect yourself using a gun, you have to work like anything else. You have to work on it to earn that right. You have to earn that right. You don't just possess it, because not everybody should be able to possess a gun. And that's the fact. And there's a lot of people who are dangerous in this country, and there should be disqualifiers for everybody.
Yeah, every person who says that they dream of shooting somebody, breaking into their house, and they have fetishized this kind of, because I've heard people talk like this in the most pornographic terms possible, how they dream somebody breaks into their house so they can shoot them. You should not be the person who has a gun.
No way. Absolutely not.
Once you squeeze that trigger, you can't bring that bullet back. You can't. People need to have training. People, if you have children below the age of 18 living in your house, should be mandatory trigger locks and safes, you know, and these people that fantasize about doing that, you know what? No, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that.
Now, the Rittenhouse trial, anybody, they're still in deliberation. Any thoughts on how this is going to go? Sarah, let's start with you. You think he walks?
I'm really worried that he will. And honestly, I'm worried that even if the jury found him guilty, that the judge would sentence him with time served, because the judge seems so far up this guy's butt that it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know that I have. I don't know that I have such thoughts on this judge, because I'm still of the mindset that you do everything you possibly can for the defendant and you make the prosecution do their job. The prosecution's done, I don't know, such a great job. This nonsense with the video, some of the stuff that they've pulled. I don't know. If I'm sitting in that hot seat, I think I wanted the deference to go to the defense, or am I just to believing in how the system is supposed to work as opposed to how it actually works?
It seems like it's only working for white people and not so much for people of color. Even that video thing, like, that just seems like a ridiculous thing to me, where it's like, you know, we have the video, we emailed it to you. It's not our fault that you can't pull it up in the right resolution. You know, like, it's ridiculous that they're complaining about the stupidest little thing and asking for mistrials for this stuff. I made a joke this morning where I was like, you know, the defense is asking for a mistrial now because Kyle Rittenhouse got a bacon, egg, cheese, biscuit instead of his McMuffin. I mean, that's where I feel like we are with this. It's become ridiculous.
Well, he should get, you know, bacon, egg, cheese, you know, he can't have that.
I love the biscuit. The biscuit's good.
There you go.
If you're a defense attorney and you're looking for an issue to call for a mistrial, you're going to find one. They were looking for something. They need something that they can recall later for an appeal. I don't see a way for him to win. I could see a lot of people wanting to side with like Republicans over Democrats or whatever, like thinking that it's a partisan thing. But I think if people look at the facts in this, no matter what, the fact is he killed people. He killed people with a gun that he shouldn't have had. He was in a place that was basically under siege by whoever, both the police and other people. And he shouldn't have been there in the first place. So there's so many laws that he broke that night. He needs to be made an example out of. He was a vigilante who murdered people. That's what happened. That's a fact. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know about that.
We need to hold him accountable.
Yeah, I'm wondering how the jury's going to look at this, because in the moment that he fired that shot at the guy with the skateboard, he was defending himself. So if you're looking at just that second, I think he was defending himself. I think he was a scared kid with a gun who got himself into a situation that he should have never been allowed to get into. And again, I go back to the mother allowing that to happen. But in that split second,
just like you just defined every school shooter ever, every single one of them, because he's a scared kid with a gun who didn't have any friends and he was alone and by himself. I don't care. He should have had a gun in the first place. Blame the politicians who let him get there in the first place. And he should have never had a gun. He needs to be made an example out of. He needs to be found guilty. He needs to spend the rest of his life in prison without the chance of parole. Like, that is what needs to happen. I doubt it will, but I think he's going to spend some time in prison. That's my point.
I want to add to that that you can say that the guy with the skateboard was attacking him, but the truth is they just watched him murder a person, and they were not about to let this guy run away and get away with it. In their mind, they thought, if we don't stop this kid gets away with it. You know, for him to show up and say that he's an EMT, there's pictures of him wearing surgical gloves while he's carrying his rifle. Absolutely unacceptable. He shouldn't have been there in the first place. His mother should go to jail, and the judge should be blood tested to make sure he's not Kyle Rittenhouse's real father. That's all I'm saying.
The thing about the last two people that he killed the last two people that he shot after he had killed the first guy, that crowd of people started screaming, active shooter, and that's when they started running toward him. They thought that he was a mass shooter that they wanted to try and stop. So it's not like the idea that somehow he was the victim here is absurd, because if he didn't have the gun to begin with, he wouldn't have been the victim.
No, absolutely. But what I was saying is, if you're only looking at those split seconds in time, you can make the case that he was defending himself. I, from the beginning, have said he shouldn't have been there. He's guilty. He should not have brought the gun there. He escalated the situation from the start. And I have my conservative friends, well, he could be anywhere he wants. No, if you're going into a place where you know there is violence and your intent is, I am going to stop, I am, me personally, going to take my gun and stop this, I'm sorry. I don't know that you can, I don't know that you can claim the self-defense, because I think you're escalating it.
Right.
That's the same case with the Ahmaud Arbery thing too, where, you know, the guy was the one who escalated the situation because he pulled out the gun. You know, up until that point, Ahmaud Arbery wasn't fighting for his life. The second he saw the gun, it was about me or you. And it's just absurd to me that they're trying to claim that they're innocent when they're the ones who escalated the situation and caused the shooting to begin with.
Yeah.
And the father stood in the middle of the truck yelling, I'm going to effing shoot you.
Yeah, and now there are too many black pastors in the courthouse.
God forbid.
That was ridiculous. Oh, ridiculous. Show your racism on your sleeve right there, buddy.
Yeah.
And then I think the judge said something like, and I think this is a load, but he did say, I didn't even notice Reverend Jackson was, but he's making a good point there, because it's like, yeah, this is what you're going to have to deal with and confront if you're going to have this kind of nonsense and these kind of laws. Like, this is going to be a continuous kind of thing. And it really is, you're right, y'all are right. Like, when they pulled the gun, when they showed the gun to Arbery, I mean, at that point, them saying, I was scared because he's bigger than me, or that he would beat me up. Well, of course he's going to hit you. Of course he's going to fight back. It's fight or flight at that point. Who else is around him? He's outnumbered. You guys have guns. What are you supposed to, like, he's going to try to get away by any means necessary, like any normal, sane human being would. And so it's just not, it's not fair.
And you guys chased him down.
Yeah, you
exactly.
So last, real quick, yes or no, guilty, not guilty. Scott.
Guilty.
Sarah.
I think Kyle Rittenhouse may be guilty on a few. I think the Ahmaud Arbery guys are going to be guilty.
Yeah, I do. Rich.
The Ahmaud Arbery guys are going to be guilty. I think Kyle's going to walk. I think he's going to be acquitted.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Guys,
I'm going to say that Kyle Rittenhouse is going to be found guilty and be sent to life without parole. I think that's what's going to happen.
I don't think the judge will do it.
All right. Well, we will see. Guys, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. As always, good stuff. Our all-star crew, Rich Ojeda, No Dems Left Behind. You can make sure you check out the work that he does. Sarah Burris, Raw Story, rawstory.com. And, of course, Scott Dworkin of the Democratic Coalition. If you got any topics, any ideas, thoughts, things you want our panel to address, by all means, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any of today's program, you can download the podcast there at the website, thericksmithshow.com, there for your entertainment and enjoyment. And as always, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.